There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Blackula, Blackula, he's a big blood-sucking freak, not just some big caped geek. We've been watching Blackula.
Oh, dear.
That, of course, was from the Gamera Adagio for Strings in F-flat. Welcome to Max Mike Movies, the podcast that treats you to fine, bespoke cinematic conversation every week. Oh, and there's us, too. We're doing a series on offbeat vampire films called I Want to Watch Your Film. And as you may have guessed, the one we viewed this week is the 1972 epic Blackula. Epic. That's a funny word, isn't it? But you know what's not funny? Why, it's our host, Max. That's not funny, Mike. Levine, prove me wrong, Max.
That's not funny.
See? And me, I'm the jester of this here show. Mike. Line. Line. Loose.
Mike, honey, we're filming.
Oh, thanks. And how we jest. But not right now. We're headed on over to the
poll question.
If you recall, on these very airwaves, we asked who you thought was the coolest vampire. Why do I have a feeling no one said Blackula? Or did they?
Did they?
Starting things off, we have Vince, purveyor of fine penguin products, writing us all the way from exotic Canada. Say it with me, Max. Canada.
Canada. He had to send it by messenger penguin.
He did. He posted, quote, I really liked this movie, meaning Only Lovers Left Alive, though I can't say any of the problems Mike in particular talked about aren't legit. I saw all his films up to Dead Man, I might have to see Ghost Dog now, and the pace in this was certainly spry compared to Stranger Than Paradise. Coolest vampire? Catherine Deneuve and David Bowie in The Hunger win all the prizes, particularly Catherine Deneuve. I won't go too much into it in case it's on your list, and it is, because I have a lot to say about it. There is a scene where a detective looks at a bust of a woman in her house, and he says, it looks like you. And she just calmly says, it's 2,000 years old, with no other explanation. Swoon. I hope you consider, oh dear, Vodor Lock. It's free on Tubi with English
Wait a
subtitles.
Minute. If you spell it backwards, that's
go ahead.
Still nothing.
We loved it here, but we also read the original story it's based on.
Oh.
We watched a Boris Karloff film, a trilogy film, and he was a vampire of sorts in the last part, and we thought it seemed familiar but didn't know why. I recently learned that section was called Vordulok, and it all made sense. Oh. I think you guys will appreciate another fact I just learned. George Romero filmed several episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. End quote.
What?
Wow.
What?
George Romero filming.
What?
That's what he says.
It's a beautiful day for brains.
That's frightening.
Oh, dear God. I didn't want to know that.
I think it's cool, but thanks for all that, Vince. Today we're going to see how they make zombie films. Okay. Flapping on over to Facebook, we have author Toni Kellner first. She replied, quote, Frank Langella as Dracula, but Kiefer Sutherland from The Lost Boys is close. If we're including TV vampires, then I must add Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Eric Northman from True Blood, end quote. Yeah. Why not include them? Thanks, Toni.
Sure.
Charles Forsyth wrote, quote, Miriam Blaylock, Catherine Deneuve, in The Hunger, runners-up, John Blaylock, David Bowie. Wow, when is the first time or last time you heard David Bowie as a runner-up?
Yeah, seriously.
Both of them in The Hunger. Severin, Bill Paxton in Near Dark.
Effin' Bill Paxton.
Was a vampire?
Yeah, he's in that.
Lestat de Lioncourt, Tom Cruise. Just kidding. If you do another,
you got us.
I know. If you do another Directors in Short Pants series, The Hunger was Tony Scott's first feature film. I thought Near Dark was Catherine Bigelow's first film, but it was her second, end quote. If we do The Hunger here, we can't do it there. But Bill Paxton, a vampire, did not know. Okay. Thanks, Charles. Tyler Stewart said, quote, Miriam Blaylock from The Hunger leaps to mind, end quote. Wow, seems The Hunger is a popular one. Thanks, Tyler.
Yeah.
Byron Ho responded, Edward from Twilight. Oh, dear, we have a disqualification.
I'm sorry. Yep. Now for the spanking machine.
When he asked if he was serious, Byron responded, no, he's probably the worst. I liked Leslie Nielsen in Dracula Dead and Loving It, end quote.
Oh, well, dear.
We'll allow that. Thanks, Byron. Coolest vampire, Leslie Nielsen. Okay, sure.
Hey, better than Edward.
Yes, lots. Regan McStravick was next with, quote, ooh, another tough call. Kiefer Sutherland, for sure, but also Anne Paralowd, or Paralow? Don't know her. And George Hamilton, I had to mention him because probably nobody else will. And how can I forget Wesley Snipes and Kate Beckinsale? Wow, there have been a lot of cool vampires, end quote. You are correct. No one else mentioned George. Thanks, Regan.
Nope. He's Children of the Night, shut up.
Yeah, see our entire episode on, actually, you know, just, it's fine. Dr. Rebecca Pelkey sent, quote, the coolest is a very particular phrase. Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer was pretty darn cool. Adam and Eve in Only Lovers Left Alive, Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton. And finally, the girl, she's never named, in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. She's probably the coolest, end quote. Tilda Swinton, Only Lovers Left Alive, have we got a coincidence for you. Check out last week's shows. And thanks, Becca. Matt Reisman answered, quote, Celine, Kate Beckinsale, from Underworld, end quote. Ooh, another for Kate. Thanks, Matt. Derek Steele wrote, quote, Blade, end quote. So I don't know if that's an answer or a question, but
is there another character we don't know about?
Blade?
Blade? The vampire nudger?
No, but
Excuse me.
Stop that. Yep. Go out and stand in the sun for a while.
Okay.
The mailbag is bursting with a new letter from our pal Bill O'Lading, Max.
Bill O'Lading.
Thank you. You're welcome. Quote, this is a cinema-focused podcast, so I'll set aside the cool television vampires, True Blood's Pam, Buffy's Spike, What We Do in the Shadows' entire cast aside.
True.
The coolest vampire has got to be Blade of Stephen Norrington's Blade, 1998, and Del Toro's Blade 2, 2002, both played by Wesley Snipes. A hot, stoic badass in leather and black sunglasses, Blade was born while his mother was attacked and killed by a vampire, and now wanders the world slaying his own kind. The second of the franchise is especially good, with stylized visuals to the killer action scenes. Snipes is charismatic throughout, juxtaposed against some goofy fun and colorful side characters. Runners-up include, well, the runners-up for the Brat Pack, in Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys, 1987. Angsty Gen Xers wander into a vampire hunter war. It's got great special effects, real scares mixed with silly humor, and an overwhelming amount of gay subtext. Cool! And finally, really? I make no apologies for it, Blackula, 1972.
How about that?
I watched it in a college dorm way back when, and while we were all warned that it is so bad it's good, it's actually pretty good. If you sit down with it, you'll find a horror film that largely takes itself seriously and holds up an effective chill ride. And here Bill recounts the plot a bit, so I'll skip that part, only because I'm going to do it later. Yeah.
We appreciate the thought there, Bill.
He continues, as silly as it is to hear everyone in the film say the name Blackula, the fast-paced story holds up, in my view, and Blackula is generally empathetic as the tortured monster at its center, end quote. Blackula, have we got a coincidence for you? As always, thanks, Bill. You always send us the best essays. Huh, the old hotline seems pretty dark this week. Oh, wait.
What's this?
Let's just see who dropped us a line.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. This is real Julia Roberts. Oh, I know it's been a long time, but you know how busy things can get in Hollywood. I'm working on, what, 3-4 movies right now? But that's besides the point. I would like to answer this week's poll question, which is, who is the coolest vampire in movies? I would like to vote for Stuart Townsend of Queen of the Damned. Oh, he was so slinky and rock gaudy and, oh, just the personification of cool vampire. So, yes, that's my answer. Mine, real Julia Roberts. Don't forget, that's me, real Julia Roberts. And thank you for having the poll question in the show. Goodbye.
Wow, I just get all shivery when I hear the voice of Hollywood royalty.
Oh. I know. Who'd have thought it? I don't understand why we don't have a bigger audience. They must be following her.
I know, but thank you so much, if real only, Julia Roberts, TM.
Maybe we could get her on as a guest.
That's a dream come true. Too much to hope for, but it's always, maybe for episode 400, she might make a guest appearance. Yeah, it's always a joy to hear from you. Yep. And so, another call.
Oh, you will not deprive me of my little pomegranate seed.
Oh, it's Dateline. Talk with to me, Doris. Seems she's
talk slow.
In under the wire. Let's listen.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Simplemai here to answer your poll question for the week, which just happens to be, who's the coolest vampire? Well, I have a couple of answers. My always go-to for the vampire thing is always going to be the original Nosferatu. I mean, those fingers, they give me the creeps. Anyway, the other one I came up with, don't think you've seen before, is Barnabas Collins from Dark Shadows. I know it's a TV show, but who's cooler? He's from the 60s. He's got to be cool, right? And besides, he's got all those girls in that house in the middle of nowhere, and it's all soap opera. And anyway, Barnabas Collins is my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I look forward to seeing Max later. Right, Max? Bye.
Barnabas Collins and Nosferatu. There's a pairing.
Okay, now I can see that. Yeah, Barnabas Collins was prolific. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm assuming she does not mean the Johnny Depp one.
No, which, yeah. Mm. Well, thank you, Doris. But Max. Mm,
thank you.
This was your little fanged query. Who do you think is the coolest cinematic vampire?
I do want to be able to include the TV ones, because I do think Eric Northman from True Blood is awesome.
Yeah.
I think he's terrific. I really do like Blade, even if he's only kind of a quasi-vampire.
You mean in Blades 1 and 2, right?
That's the only ones there were, yes.
Sorry, Patton.
Sorry, dude. They totally wasted you and a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
I also like Celine from the Underworld movies. Kate Beckinsale, who is a tiny, tiny little woman, still has this incredible physical presence. It's really impressive.
I mean, I'll watch her in anything. I really liked her in Van Helsing, too. And, you know, she gave Wolverine what for, so, yeah.
Yep. What about you, Mike? Who's your badass, cool, neck-bitey, lamprey type?
That sucks. one of them isn't really cool, except I really, really liked the portrayal, and I got to go with Bill Skarsgård in Nosferatu. It was just such a neat... Okay. I mean, he isn't cool in that suave kind of way, but the way they portrayed him was very cool. So I'll put him as sort of my second choice. But number one, Michael B. Jordan in Sinners. Talk about suave and charismatic. I mean,
that's a little questionable because he's only a vampire for like the second half of the movie.
I don't care.
But I guess I'll allow it. Yeah.
Like when he's trying to tempt people to get him to be invited in, I'd have said yes. You sure you can come in, Mr. Michael B. Jordan? You make me feel funny.
Yes. Please take off your shirt and come in.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it might be hot inside. We're just trying to be accommodating.
Yep.
But yeah, so those are my picks. But lots of great answers from you. Thank you all.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
Keep those minds and stakes sharp, because we have another poll for this week. And spinning Max's question around, who do you think was the worst cinematic vampire? Drop us a line, give us a call, send us a carrier pigeon. But right now, we've got to pivot back to Blackula and
the facts.
Budget. $500,000 or thereabouts. It's quite honestly,
I thought you were going to say $500, but okay.
Well, yeah. Remember, this is an American international film. Yes. So just short of $2 million, we have a winner.
Yeah. Wow. They made money. Nice. Yeah. That would explain the sequel.
It would, and we're coming to that. First off, we have quite a few alumni from the original Star Trek show here.
Mm-hmm.
William Marshall played computer whiz Richard Daystrom in The Ultimate Computer. I am great. You are great.
You are great. Elisha... No, they'll destroy the M5.
M5. Apple.
Big missed opportunity.
Elisha Cook played Samuel T. Coghlan in Court Martial. Charles McCauley played both Landru in the episode Return of the Archons and Jarrus in Wolf of the Fold. Thalmas Rasulala would eventually play Captain Donald Varley in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation as well.
Yep.
So much Star Trek.
Much Star Trek.
Much. Speaking of folks from TV shows, actor Denise Nicholas, TV's Liz from Room 222, made her movie debut here.
I'm sure she's very proud of that.
I'm not so sure, but that's all right. Another first, this was director William Crane's first film. He'd go on to direct some TV, including episodes of The Mod Squad. Oh, by the way, Link is down.
Is he?
Yes, he is. Starsky and Hutch SWAT, The Rookies, and The Dukes of Hazzard.
Starsky and Hutch SWAT, The Rookies? Why did they SWAT The Rookies?
SWAT The Rookies. SWAT The Rookies. Yeah, that's a deeper.
That's a deeper.
This was also supposedly the first appearance of a black vampire in films. Sometimes you just have to steal from yourself. Those scenes of the cargo ship at dock, they were pilfered from another American international film, Count Yorga Vampire, which came out a couple of years before.
Funny, Count Yorga, he must be a wild and crazy vampire.
Gods, I hope that's not what it's about, but yeah. As should be no surprise, they shot the whole thing in Los Angeles, most notably in the scenic Hyperion Outfall Treatment Plant. Scenic.
Yeah.
If, like us, you were real, real sad when Blackula dies at the end of this movie, don't worry, he'll be back in the sequel. Scream, Blackula, scream.
Mm-hmm.
Whose idea was it for the main character, Blackula, to have been both an African prince and been turned into a vampire by old Dracula himself? Why, star William Marshall. This was one of the top grossing films of 1972.
Whee! Good heavens, really?
Yeah. Hey, $2 million back then was
bucks
a lot.
Is a, I guess. Yeah. Wow.
When originally released in New York, you could see this movie for free if you came to the theater wearing a cape. Why don't they do that
Doesn't
anymore?
Everybody wear a cape to movies?
Operas, yes. Capes, no. Love opera. Hate poker. It is said that this movie directly influenced the creation of Marvel Comics character Blade.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. Apparently, actually, it started the whole Tomb of Dracula thing, so. And so, so much more. Actually, there wasn't very much trivia this way. You don't know any trivia for this, do you, Max?
This movie either, I think it actually started the trend, if it wasn't part of it. I'm pretty sure it's the first one of all of these blaxploitation films based on other monster movies. There was, you know, Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde.
I didn't know that.
Making that up. Blackenstein.
Yeah.
The Black Wolf Man.
Okay.
There's a ton. And they went on for a long, long time.
Yeah. I wonder if...
I mean, of course, who can forget Bloodsucker Jones?
You have to know something first to forget it.
Everyone, in fact, has forgotten it.
It's not Bloodsucker, right? It's Bloodsucker?
No, it's S-U-C-K-A.
Okay.
That is the actual title.
Bloodsucker Jones. Won't be appearing on this... Well, probably won't be appearing on this series, but...
Very unlikely, but it was... It's not that
unlikely.
Yeah, it sparked a whole trend of movies that keeps going on. I mean, some of these movies still come out today.
Bloodsucker Jones, huh? Is it about a vampire, do you know?
I'm pretty sure it is, yes.
No. Oh, our list is not written in cement. You never know.
No, but that's where you're going to be buried in.
Well, let's recap the plot for the uninitiated, shall we?
Let us.
It's 1780, and we're in Transylvania, not Los Angeles. It's the castle of Count Dracula himself, and he's entertaining guests. One is Mama Walde, an African prince, and the other, Luva, his wife. Mama Walde is there to try and enlist Dracula's help in shutting down the slave trade, because that's totally who you'd ask. But Drac, he thinks the slave trade is just keen, so instead of helping, he turns Mama Walde into a vampire and locks him in a coffin for all eternity, and kills Luva. Skip ahead nearly 200 years, and all of Drax's stuff is being sold off because, well, it is. Two guys buy all the stuff and ship it back to the States so they can make a fortune on all these badass antiques. Once all the stuff arrives, one of them makes the mistake of opening this locked coffin, and out pops a very hungry Blackula. He kills both the antique dealers and runs off. At their funeral, Blackula is spying through a curtain when he sees that one of the mourners looks just like his beloved Luva. Luva.
Luva.
He tries to approach her but frightens her off. While pursuing her, he gets hit by a cab, then bites the cab driver when she gives him sass. Next night, Tina, who looks like Luva and is conveniently played by the same actor, is with her friends at a local disco. Blackula comes in and sweeps her off her feet. She starts to fall in love, or is it fall in Luva? But one of her friends, a cop, gets suspicious, especially after it's reported that the body of one of those dead antique dealers has gone missing. And then, all the folks Blackula's bitten start coming back from the dead and causing all sorts of problems. Thomas, the cop, starts smelling vampire and gets all up in Mama Waldy's face. Tina, though, loves Mama Waldy and doesn't want to help her friend trap and kill him, regardless of his status as a blood-sucking freak. Initially, Thomas makes a good bid, noting all the people Mama Waldy's murdered, never mind the rapidly growing population of new vampires. While she agrees, and Thomas blockades her apartment building, knowing Mama Waldy will come for her, she sneaks out, meets Mama Waldy, and they try to escape. But the cops are hot on their trail, and Tina is shot and killed. Mama Waldy changes her into a vampire as there's no other way. She's mistakenly staked by Thomas and friends. Then, feeling that there's no reason to go on, Mama Waldy, Blackula, walks into the sunlight and disintegrates. The end.
The film.
So, Max,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that when you were just a young wee lad, you rushed out and saw Blackula in the theater, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I was down there in my little Jufro watching that movie.
Did you ever actually have a Jufro?
No. My family's hair doesn't grow like that. Oh, kind of okay. Unfortunate. I would have preferred it. Nah, mine gets all snarly.
I'm picturing you now, and I'm going to go with no.
But now, I don't even know what theaters it was playing at around here.
Well, and that's a good question, because it obviously made a lot of money, so it can't have just been a totally niche thing.
No, but you got to remember that the so-called black movie theaters in heavily black neighborhoods were very heavily patronized. People would go see movies there 2, 3, 5 times.
Yeah.
It was a big thing because, you know, it was a place that black people could go to watch a movie and they didn't have to worry about getting hassled.
And they actually could see a movie with people that looked like them in it, which
yeah,
sad that they had
that
to do
that. That was a big thing.
I have to say, watching this film, I couldn't help but sort of in the back of my head hear the audience talking back to the screen.
Uh-huh.
I've only experienced that once. And the first time I experienced that, I didn't know it was a thing and it drove me nuts. I actually went and saw Something Wicked This Way Comes at a neighborhood theater in DC. And it was a theater that people, that's what they do, is they talk back to the screen. It's like, don't go behind that door. Don't go behind that door and stuff like that. And I'm watching
this film
going,
we love doing that.
Well, I know, but this was before, this was like back in the early 80s. So I was like, I just want to watch the movie. Which I did, and I do like that movie. But this time, I'm sitting there watching this film, and I'm hearing their voices in the back, and it's like, that sounds like fun. I want to do that. So, yeah. Have you seen this before?
Nope, never seen it. I've seen a clip here and there. I everyone knows about it.
Right.
I mean, I've heard it referenced in TV shows, movies. I've seen the poster. I knew William Marshall from Star Trek.
Right. Or the beginning of, is it Amazon Women on the Moon?
It's not the beginning. It's in the middle somewhere where he's
a video
captain. He's a video pirate. There you go, laddies. Make all the illegal copies you want.
Oh, they're watching FCC. I'm so scared.
I remember thinking he had the coolest voice.
He does.
Awesome voice.
It
oh,
could
my
melt
God.
Melt steel. Oh, his voice is so wonderful.
Yeah. As somebody said this about Morgan Freeman, I want to sleep in a bed made of his voice.
Yeah. Apparently, he used to do Shakespeare, and I'm like, oh, I so want to see him do Shakespeare.
Oh, jeez.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah.
Oh, God.
But
he would do a great Lear.
Speaking of William Marshall, let's get to the cast. He's number one here. William Marshall as Mama Waldy.
He looks, you know, it's funny. He seems very out of place.
In what way?
He walks around like, because he seems like a classical actor.
Mm. Oh, and I see what you mean. And the others, what's that word? Don't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a couple of them, they seem like made-for-TV actors.
Yeah. I actually think that works in his favor because you want the vampire to be otherworldly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, okay, blaxploitation films, and I don't know where the term comes from. I should have looked it up. Are generally thought of as corny or over the top or stereotypical or whatever. Mm. And in a way, I'll give this away right now, I don't consider this a blaxploitation film. Okay, it's a vampire film where the main character happens to be black, but that's about it. And I gotta say, not only does he bring a level of class, he brings a depth to his character that's often missing in vampire films, especially portrayals for Dracula, because let's face it, this is more or less a retelling of Dracula.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah, right down to the whole reincarnated girlfriend.
Right. So
that is not in the book, I don't think.
I think it's in Francis Ford Coppola's
Yeah.
Which is a movie that happened.
If you're interested, I just remembered.
Did I hear
typed out? Yeah, blaxploitation is actually a very specific time and place and person for it. It was coined in 1972.
Oh.
The year this movie came out, by Junius Griffin.
Okay.
Who was the president of the Beverly Hills Hollywood NAACP chapter.
Okay.
And he was expressing concern that these films reinforce racist stereotypes by portraying black people as criminals and exploiting black culture for profit and going with that whole old cliche that all black people are vampires.
I think you added that last part yourself.
Oh, it's possible.
Is there crayon on your screen?
Oh, how did that get there?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Damn it. I hate cleaning that off. He was talking more about Superfly, but I think there were others.
Well, okay, I know we're in the middle of the cast, but you brought this up.
Yeah.
Do you consider this a blaxploitation film?
It has elements of it. It has, the street-talking, jive-savvy black character. It has the African prince. It has the idea that most of the men are either violent or misogynistic.
I don't know that I would agree with that last part. Mm. And I think that we've got Thomas the cop. He's just a guy. Like, he's...
Yeah.
I
But in other ways, it absolutely isn't. Because first off, except for the police lieutenant, almost all the authority figures in this are black. And even the lieutenant takes his cue from Dr. Thomas. I'm not sure why, because I don't think Thomas is a cop, but... Well, he basically does what he tells him, and he follows his lead. The white characters are really minimized, and while there's like one who's referred to as a racist, they aren't all like, well, what do we got here?
Yeah.
I would say this is kind of, it has elements, but no, I don't think overall this is blaxploitation.
I don't either. And I think if you're looking, and here's the thing, I thought this film was going to be like Superfly or something like that. Yeah. And it, spoiler, it very much wasn't. Mm. So interesting that that term came up this year and has been applied to this film. I don't know. And to be fair, we're not really the people to judge this, but I don't feel that it is. But we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Vanetta McGee as Tina, or Luva.
/ Luva.
Right. Not a big part, but she's fine. And I believe her sincerity that she actually loves him.
I thought that came on kind of sudden, but yes. Okay.
Hi, you love me. You're my wife. Okay.
I love you. I love you. I'm your wife.
If you don't love me, we're not going to have no picture. So, yep. Yeah, I think she's fine.
Yeah, she was okay.
Denise Nicholas as Michelle. I think she was in this, wasn't she?
She had a line or two.
She's the friend.
She was, she was the friend.
Yeah.
She's
fine.
Very friendly. She's nothing to do, really.
No.
She screams a few times, but that's about it.
Yeah. Thalmas Rasulala, who has an awesome name.
Who has the coolest name. Oh my God. I want either of those. I want to be Thalmas Levine now.
Okay, Thalmas. Doesn't work with the title of the show.
Hmm. Not really. We'll work on it.
Your name can be Thalmas, sure. But do you mind if I call you Max?
Just to keep it clear? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Van Helsing character.
He's the Van Helsing character, and he's very, I think, made for TV.
I think he probably appeared in a lot of, I mean, he's in Star Trek Next Generation, but I went ahead to go through a lot of credits to find that one.
Oh, he's been in a ton of TV, a lot. Yeah. Every kind of, every detective show, I think, where they needed an authoritative-looking black guy, they got him.
Yeah. And let's face it, it's American International, okay?
Yeah.
Samuel Z. Arkoff, or...
Samuel L. Bronkowitz.
The fact that at this point it's 72, I'm amazed American International lasted that long. Although I think they go on to do, what was that flying saucer movie with Christopher Lee in it? Alien Invasions?
Alien Encounter. I know the one you mean.
I think that might have been an American International.
Oh, Lord, film. That's a bad one.
So, yeah. But I think he's fine for all things considered. Gordon Pinsent as Lieutenant Jack Peters, fine.
He's basically the Dr. Watson here. Well, okay, whatever you say.
Yeah.
The one that kind of surprised me with how bad he was the guy playing Dracula.
Charles McCauley. That's Landru.
I saw him, and I stand by this.
I just giggled, and I'm like, oh, is that Landru? Oh, my God, it's Landru.
I didn't recognize him. Oh, no. Dracula, guide us.
I mean...
Are you of the body?
I mean, he doesn't actually have a photo on IMDb, which surprised me. He's been in everything. He is
really?
A very long, hardworking, mostly TV actor. And I think he brings all of his TV actorness to this short role. Where he plays Dracula. And loving it.
The one benefit is he's only on screen for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Although he does bring up the whole, I like racism. Racism is tasty.
I am fine with racism because I am a racist.
And then,
which is kind of weird. It's like, I thought you were just down on humans. You also go by skin color. Wow. You really are a dick.
Yeah. Then skip. We'll get to Elisha Cook. At this point, he's actually finally going by Elisha Cook, not Elisha Cook Jr. He goes all the way back. I mean, even before, I'm sure, this, but he goes all the way back to, is it Maltese Falcon?
House on Haunted Hill.
Well, Maltese Falcon, he's in that. Remember, he plays the assassin, the kid. He's been in everything.
Wilmer, that's right.
At this point, it's kind of sad to see he's just doing American International films because he's obviously way better than that. But the man was a working actor. He's got a small part. It's literally, he has a hook. I couldn't figure out why he had a hook.
Yes, he had a hook, and he had one of those, I always find this really annoying. They do this all the time with prostheses in old movies.
Yeah.
His hook hand is like a foot longer. than his other hand, because, of course, he's just holding on to it. They didn't make a cover. It's like, come on.
It's a tiny part. He's fine.
Yeah.
The only other one person I want to bring up, and she does not have a picture on IMDb, is Kettie Lester's Juanita Jones. I thought she was
cab driver.
Fine. Yeah.
Sassy black cab driver lady. Know, yep.
But she is, and she's fun. I like her. And then
she was one of my favorite characters. She at least had real energy, and she wasn't leaving anything out on the field.
No.
It's like, I am going to, you know, whipping her head around, yelling something like, oh, I mean, hey, come on, you're all right.
Don't bite me. And then, of course, you know, she turns into a vampire. Mm-hmm. I will say that her acting is markedly better before she turns into a vampire.
Yeah.
Because everybody in this film who turns into a vampire literally leaps up in front of a camera with green makeup and dime store fangs and goes, ah!
Really bad hair. I don't know what the hell happens to their hair. That's what really got me. When William Marshall goes full, like, you know, blah, I bite you now. His eyebrows grow approximately 4 feet.
Well, he gets his those weird sideburn, mutton chops. Yeah.
Yeah, those aren't mutton chops. Those are full mountain sheep chops.
Yeah.
All the way down to his mouth. He looks ridiculous, and it's totally not necessary because he's got a really expressive face, and he's got those great deep-set eyes. He doesn't need any of that.
I think the only reason they did it is they wanted to make a very clear distinction between Mama Waldy and Blackula. And that's the only thing I can think of. Like, when he's in Blackula mode, he's much more animalistic, which...
I'd say we're done with the cast.
Yeah.
Now, yes.
There's lots of silhouettes. They're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although...
I do like... But...
Billy and Bobby.
Yeah, by the way, you'll be glad to know, not only do black people have characters to be offended about.
So do gay people.
But gay people.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Billy and Bobby, who are referred to as the F word a number of times.
Yeah. And
the one thing I will say is it's not played for laughs.
Really? You don't think they're played for laughs?
They're laughing. They're camping it up, but they're having fun. I don't think people are laughing at them.
I do.
Mostly, I think people are like, what the hell is this?
I honestly think they were there for laughs. We were supposed to make fun of the fags. That's what they're there for. Yeah, and they were so switchy. Yeah. And I got to say, I might believe the character playing Billy is gay. The guy playing, Bobby was the first one. He turns into the vampire. Do we actually see Billy? Bobby, I think, but Billy, I was like, he's not gay.
One with the cigarette holder?
He's just swishing it up. And he felt false to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. It's like, okay, we'll have a film with black characters, but we're going to make fun of the gays too. So, okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But yeah, we're done with the cast. So,
yeah.
1780.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you?
It kind of did. I mean, you're about 100 years early for the Dracula story, but okay. I mean, he's 400 years old. I'm sure he was supposed to be around then.
They do reference it. They basically say, you know, when Blackula wakes up, it's like, oh, yeah, that guy Van Helsing killed him off, so we don't have to worry about him, so we can sell his stuff now. Of course, Van Helsing killed him almost 100 years before this movie came out, but whatever.
Yeah, he said he was 150 years ago, he was killed by this guy Van Helsing, wiped out the whole family.
Yeah, family. family.
No, you know, Dracula, Bride of Dracula, Son of Dracula, Dog of Dracula.
Son of Dracula? Yeah, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Dog of Dracula.
Yeah. I like the fact, I mean, because the name Blackula is so silly, but they point out where it comes from, that it's Dracula insulting him. He says, I'm turning you into a parody of me, a lesser version. And so I'm Dracula, you're going to be Blackula. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah. Well, who survived?
Lively sense of humor, those Transylvanians.
Well, yeah, he didn't even try for an accent, which I don't even know if I wanted him to or not. But I love the interest in the slave trade at the beginning, because that didn't make me feel uncomfortable. I also just was like, why are you talking to him? Hey, Dracula, can you help us stop the slave trade? Like, what?
Dracula, yeah, sure, because landlocked Transylvania is a big part of the slave trade.
Yeah. I will say that they follow a pretty typical take on the vampire mythology, at least as put forth by Bram Stoker. I will, however, counter that with, dear gods, vampires happen real quick in this film.
Boy, they do. And except for like random ones, they're not very impressive. I mean, Dr. Thomas tosses them around like they're sofa cushions most of the time.
Yeah.
Dracula is one of the only ones we see who uses super strength.
And super vision. And watch out for that kryptonite. Because can he fly?
Yeah. We find that out. It's about three quarters of the way through the movie, which quite honestly I think was a good decision, because on that kind of budget, there's no... all I could think of was from Love at First Bite. Come back, black chicken. Come back, black chicken.
Yeah.
Because he turns into a rubber bat on a string.
Here's the real problem with trying to do anybody turning into a bat. If you've ever seen a bat fly, and I'll be amazed if you have, only because they're really fast, and they do not hover, and they do not go in a straight line. They're weasels of the sky. Honestly, if you've ever seen a weasel jump around and stuff, that's a bat. If somebody turned into a bat, flying, you'd never see it. So
it looks like it's having some kind of a seizure when it flies. Suggesting again, mammals are not supposed to fly anyway.
Yeah, well, are bats mammals? Do they do
Yes,
the
they are.
Thing? Don't they lay are. Eggs? I'm pretty sure they lay eggs. It says here in Wikipedia, bats lay eggs.
It does not. You're making it up. You're looking at Elon Musk's Wikipedia.
Yeah. And there's also, let's face it, the bat's not the only bad special effect in here. The makeup in general is terrible.
Ooh, ouch.
It's
even the fangs are pretty poor.
Yeah, I think they're pretty again, much that's, one size fits all. I think they're...
Again, the fangs, unless you spend a lot of time and money, are really hard not to make look silly.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact this movie also falls prey to one of the dumbest cliches, and this is not a blaxploitation or a black or white thing, it's a vampire thing. So I see this more or less as blaxploitation. This movie is a vampsploitation movie.
Yuck.
In that, when you see the wounds on the neck, they are two perfect little holes about a half an inch apart. Check your own canine teeth. How far apart are they in your mouth?
Well, you know, and that's why they did the original Nosferatu the way they did. They made his
His piercers, front two teeth were like, his front incisors were the draining and that made sense.
What's also weird is that...
But otherwise, it's like you have to put one side of your face down to make a hole, and you put the other side to make a hole, and they're so nice and neat, and...
Well, that's because you're filling the left fang first, and then you go back and fill the right fang.
Oh, I see. To get both tanks filled.
Yeah.
Later on, they got much more sensible, and you just see, you know, massive throat wounds, which is what you would have.
Well, they did it once when Bobby, they're looking at Bobby in the funeral home. They go and peel back, and his neck has got this big chunk missing, and it's like, well, that makes sense.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. There's not a lot of money. When I found the budget, I had to look in, like, I think three different places, and even then it was estimated. So that might be a high figure. I don't know. Another sign of, besides the name of Samuel Z. Harkoff as a symbol of quality, cut it out and collect 10 and send it in for your own Bumpy Puck singing cereal bowl. the opening of the film, we have this, quite honestly, very graphic, initially kind of cool animated opening until the bat shows up. And it's like, oh, this is a poor man, Saul Bass. And if you don't know who Saul Bass is... Psycho is the opening for Psycho. Very graphic, usually slightly animated, but people have been using him as an inspiration forever. Look him up. It's S-A-U-L-B-A-S-S.
And then this little flappy bat appears, and this little red blotch, which I assume represents blood, appears and starts running away from the bat.
Yeah, well, it turns into luva, you know. That thing you use in the shower where you like to scrape your skin down the loofah. Yeah, and I actually thought it was a nice attempt because it was something different. And another attempt that I actually thought worked really well is the soundtrack. I love me some good funky music soundtrack, and I really like the soundtrack to this film.
Really? What about the songs in the disco?
Why not? Sure. Yeah, it's funk. I like funk. It's actually considered a fairly classic. It's considered a fairly classic soundtrack, and it's still in print.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
I like funk, and I think it's cool. And why not have it? I think it's better used here than it was in Love at First Bite. Although that's right, they had to change that song out because they lost the rights to whatever Gloria Gaynor or whatever it was.
I love the nightlife.
I've got to boogie in the disco.
Rahound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Now, since you and I have heard about this movie, it's been in the books like Golden Turkey Awards, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Were you expecting the movie to play it straight?
No, I thought it was going to be way more over the top, which a lot of them are. A lot of blaxploitation movies, they just lean. I mean, Hollywood Shuffle is all about that.
Right.
Yes, you want. I know what you want. You want the jive ass. You want sticking the ass out and bugging the eyes.
See our entire episode on Hollywood Shuffle.
Yep. I was surprised everyone plays it very straight, especially William Marshall.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, that made it a lot easier to watch.
It certainly made it more comfortable to watch, right? But I think... And it seems when I did my research for the trivia that William Marshall was a big voice in making this character something other than what was originally written. And I didn't look in to see who wrote this. And I don't know if it was honestly a white guy who wrote it or not. It may not have been. I don't know. But there is a sympathy or an empathy we have for Mama Waldy that we don't generally have for Dracula, which is a good thing because Dracula himself is a horrible character.
Yeah.
But despite the fact that this isn't meant to be Dracula, it is meant to be Blackula, for want of a better word, I actually found myself understanding him. And quite honestly, except for when he's first let out of his coffin, and let's face it, he hasn't eaten in 150 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Mama Waldy does not attack people. It's only when they attack him first, or they won't get out of his face because they've hit him with their cab.
Well, yeah. Or they took pictures of him.
Yeah, but it's like he's not... Usually Dracula just goes out and eats people. And like that's, you know, I'm the chief of the night or whatever, and that's what I do. Here, it's like, I just want the woman I love and to be left alone for the most part. He doesn't even try to make her a vampire until it's too late. And then it's just like, I have to do this. I don't want to, but I have to.
It's an interesting touch. He tells her, he says, I will not force you. I won't force you to be a vampire. Never you. If you tell me to go, I'll go and I'll never come back.
Yeah.
And then, that's a different thing because we've, you know, as we see with Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, You know, there he's like, ah, yes, we are destined to be together. We are destined to be double jointed.
Or Hungarian. Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't leave her, and he's basically a stalker.
So. Well, and at the end of the film, when somebody mistakenly trying to kill Blackula, and they open his coffin and find out that somehow Luva's gotten in there. I won't ask how that happened, but whatever.
Yeah.
They kill her by mistake, and even you can tell because it's, I think it's Michelle and Dr. Thomas are both there, and they're the ones who do it.
Yeah.
They're sorry because it's, oh, this is our friend, but then Mama Waldy is just like, he's like, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
And there's a point where they have the cross, and he's like, you don't need that. And he just takes himself and walks up out of the sewage treatment plant or whatever
it is. No, it was a power station.
It wasn't. It was some sort of treatment plant, but I don't know what
they called it a power station, but I think it was a water treatment or sewer treatment plant, like you say. I assume, a.k.a. someplace they didn't need a permit to shoot.
I think this one actually had a permit because, they were down there a long time.
Yeah.
But he just takes himself out. He walks up into the sunlight and just decomposes with real maggots. Blech.
Yeah, which I don't get. How did the maggots, how did the flies have any time to lay eggs in him? And
I think it was just meant to be shocking. It's fine. But he basically destroys himself because he's like, hey, the one thing I was still around for is gone. And I thought that was actually kind of touching, and it was certainly not the ending I was expecting.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch. Mm. It wasn't the gun down or staked or whatever. It's like, nope, I don't want to go on living.
Yeah.
Until the next movie.
Well, I think what happened was American International went, oh my God, we made a profit. And to be fair, they were actually in the red as a company at that point, and this film turned them around. Oh, that was in the, trivia. But yeah. So, and apparently it has to do with voodoo. That's how they bring it back. Yes. Voodoo.
Oh.
Yeah. So, circling back to any earlier points, the scene in the nightclub, I did happen to notice that there was a lot of production values in that scene.
Yep, a lot of production values.
Am I crying?
Yep.
That's another deeper. And I couldn't help but wonder if there was the one chunk of exploitation wasn't those scenes. Or later on.
I mean, that's also where we get one of the more, you know, blaxploitation characters, Skillet.
Yeah, Skillet.
Who basically all Skillet does is show up, hit on the women.
Yeah.
And of course, mention about Dracula that he is a strange dude.
Yeah. He actually.
That's all Skillet does.
He felt very out of place in the film to me. Did he seem that way to you too?
He kind of did because, you know, these guys, Tina and Michelle and Dr. Thomas, they're all like professionals. They're all like high end working people. I think like Michelle's a nurse. And Tina, I think, is she a photographer?
I don't remember.
I think she's an artist.
Yeah, you know? Maybe.
And Skillet is, I mean, I always get the feeling they could have done a little bit more with, we all grew up in the same neighborhood or something. Because otherwise, I'm like, why do you hang out with him? You guys, you obviously don't like him. He's annoying you. And you have nothing in common. You have nothing to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't stay long. I'll give him that.
No.
Now, Max, often when people make films, they don't think about the time they're making the film in. They just make the movie and the setting is the setting. Do you think that this film in any way represents the time period in which it's made?
I don't know. I mean, really, the clothes and the hairstyle, they're so timeless. They're so, you know, they could be any time. There's an oh, my God, this is peak 70s. And this is just where the 70s was getting started, and they're starting up with a bang.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, platform shoes as far as the eye can see, bell bottoms.
Although I got to give her credit, she runs in them really well.
How she did that without dying. I mean, that must have been a stunt woman. There's no way.
Yeah. It is as 70s as you get. And, you know, to Max's point about the made-for-TV actors, it even though it's a film, there is a, shall we say, made-for-TV quality about the way it's filmed. It's grainy.
I made for TV, love you.
Yeah. There's a couple of scenes, too. You're sort of, as an audience member, left to guess how the victim dies. For example, Juanita Jones seems to die by overacting.
Yes,
because William Marshall gets near her and then she just starts screaming as loud as she can and falls over. Like, we don't actually see him bite her.
Yep.
So Yeah. I picture, like we talked earlier about the where this film might be playing, and I know it can't, I mean, it might have played in some of these places, but it had a kind of grindhouse feeling to me.
Yeah, definitely did. Yeah, I got the feeling this movie was made very quickly, as a lot of the movies were in that era and with that kind of budget. Yeah, it did definitely had a grindhouse. I got the feeling that sometimes the performances weren't as good because the actors had only had like 20 minutes to learn their lines.
Yeah, it could be. But yeah. That being said, obviously it pulled together pretty well. I do have a couple of questions here about some of the things that happened in the film. So at the end, basically Dr. Thomas, or police officer Dr. Thomas, because it seems like he, I don't know. He calls.
Yeah, he kind of is a.
Yeah. I assume he's a cop that just works for. They say at one point that he is in the something something department. I'm like, that's not a department, but whatever.
Yeah.
So he basically figures out, well, Mama Waldie's going to come after Tina / Luva. Mm-hmm. So we should, you know, basically put her in her apartment, and we should cordon off the area and apparently invite everybody from the neighborhood to come by and stand around. Could you figure out what was going on with that?
I think they were shooting in somebody's neighborhood and people started wandering up and saying, here, fine, you can be in a crowd scene, just sign this release. I gotta say, I realize applying logic to vampire movies is a little silly, but there are some things in this where I call no way. One of the big ones, how does Dracula know how to be a vampire? He has literally, the whole thing that Dracula was going on about.
You mean Blackula know how to be a vampire?
Blackula, excuse me. How does Blackula know how? Because, you know, Dracula locked him in a box 2 seconds after he turned him. He didn't teach him anything, but he knows how to shapeshift. He knows how to use his powers. He knows that he doesn't show up in photographs. How the hell do you intuit that, by the way?
He also knows as soon as he gets out of that coffin that the first thing he needs is a cape.
Yep.
And he keeps it on.
And I think Skillet's the only one who mentions the cape.
Yeah.
And he wants to buy it. He's like, I think the cape's working for him. You know, I think that's why the women like him. It's the cape, which kind of, again, they pay tribute to in Love at First Bite.
I gotta say, though, as weird and anachronistic as the cape is, William Marshall pulls it off.
He can pull it off. That's the annoying thing. He can walk around in a tuxedo and an opera cape, and you just go, hey, he's looking sharp.
Yeah, like it's fine. Usually that just sort of stands out, and it's weird, but it's fine. Yeah, who knows? I mean, how does his vampires pop up so quickly? Because it's literally like, I bite you, I suck a few seconds, you're a vampire. Like, there's no third night, there's no being buried. No,
none of this being buried, nothing. Nothing, not even you have to drink my blood.
It's, no.
Also, and this part really bothered me, Thomas figures out he's a vampire. He knows the cross affects them. Mm-hmm. Why are none of the other cops equipped to deal with the vampires? They're going after him. They're trying to protect Tina. None of them are carrying crosses, stakes, garlic. How hard would it have been to just get everybody a couple of popsicle sticks and nail them together? Nothing.
Look over there.
Oh, a monkey. What? Also, why are all of the cops in the patrol cars wearing motorcycle cop helmets?
Quite honestly, I think they actually should, the way they drive in these movies.
That's true. They're pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some things in here that don't make a lot of sense.
Nope.
I mean, again, it's American International. They're not known for sense. I mean, they brought us films like The Beginning of the End and It Conquered the World. So, you know, it's fine.
I'm Peter Graves.
Twice. So, yeah, I see your problems and shrug. Because, you know, whatever.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is the pacing of this movie is pretty good, and you don't have time to linger on, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense for very long.
I thought it was a bit slow. That
being said, there were times it was, but overall I thought it was okay.
The thing is that if you look at pretty much any film from the early 70s, you're probably going to think the same thing, because back then films were just slower. But I will agree that we don't linger on anything that we don't need to for very long. Once he pops up and he starts going after Luva / Tina, that pretty much is the focus of the film, and we don't really deviate much, although the one little thing where he gets hit by the cab and Juanita Jones was fun. We don't do too much with Dr. Thomas having to dig through archives or find people to
believe. No, he's got a pile of books he got from Barnes & Noble or something on vampires. But he also has to deal with Juanita when she comes back, which apparently with these vampires, if you just thrust the cross at them enough, they die eventually.
Well, and she once again sort of falls prey or falls victim to overacting.
I'm stuck
in the corner. I'm stuck in the corner. Ah, and the light coming through the window. I don't know about you, but I was like, that's not sunlight.
No, nope.
That's an orange gel. That's what that is.
And how come when Blackula turns into a bat, parts of him are glowing green?
Well, he accidentally landed on one of those signs that has the paint on it. It was still wet. The ones that glow in the dark for traffic.
See, they could have taken a moment to show that. That would have that took me right out.
There's no such thing. I made it up. So, what you got for us before we wrap this up, Max?
I did like the fact that toward the end, I thought they weren't going to do it, but Blackula does actually say, good evening.
Okay.
It's like, nice one. And William Marshall pulls it off. He says it and doesn't sound dopey. I don't know how, but
because
he does.
Because he's William Marshall, that's how.
Yeah. Also, when they're throwing all of these oil lamps around in the warehouse, I don't know why they're there. They're not lit, and yet they explode. How?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but back in the old hurricane lamp days, they had self-igniting lamps.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Those are called flashlights.
I don't know. I mean, there was a big chunk of the budget right there, the old burning people effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, interesting strategy on the part of the cops. Hey, we're inside this building. Let's set it on fire.
I mean, quite honestly, the cops in this film are all not really any worse portrayed than cops in many, many other films. So,
No, they're just one step above Keystone.
Yeah, but we're two steps above Keystone, and to that end, we should decide, Blackula, yes or no?
The finish.
So, Max.
Present.
Blackula, yes or no?
From a historical perspective, I think it's interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great movie. It's not even a particularly good movie, but it's an interesting movie. There are things in there, little things. A lot of the time, the so-called blaxploitation movies try to deal with racism, and they're usually very heavy-handed about it. It's less effective. In this, it slips here and there. Like when Thomas is complaining about one particular cop who always seems to beat up the black suspects more than the white suspects. It's a throwaway, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's surprisingly well-crafted. Like I say, historically, I think it's interesting. If you're a fan of vampire movies, you want to see where some of their earlier attempts, I think it's one of the better ones you could see. It's not a great movie, although William Marshall is really cool. So I would go with meh. What about you?
This is one of those films that's just been hanging out there for years and years. It's like, oh, I should see this. It's so bad, it's good. Boy, the last time we tried that, we were both disappointed. We watched The Exorcist 2 hoping for this amazingly bad Richard Burton performance, and it was just boring.
It's dull.
Very, very dull. So I thought this was going to be something totally different. I thought this was going to be an over-the-top, people's eyes bugging out, you know, all the stereotype things that you'd expect in a blaxploitation film. And I was quite honestly pleasantly surprised. The reason I like this film, and I'm not going to go out and say it's a good film. It's not a good film. It also suffers from being in the 70s. It's a bit slower paced. It's grainy is, I think, the kind way to put it.
Yeah.
There's plot holes, bad makeup and stuff. But quite honestly, the reason this film works the way it does is William Marshall. William Marshall is a joy to watch. He's got passion. There's depth to the character that could easily have been ignored by just about anybody else. I understand his plight. I like the little twist they have at the end about Dracula basically ending his own life or unlife or anti-life or whatever it is.
Non-life.
It's not great. It is not. It's an American International film. American International was never great. I don't care.
They don't make great movies. They just don't.
I'm not great. You're not great. So it is something I would watch as a curiosity, or honestly to watch William Marshall, because there's not that much with him in it, which is a shame. And he really is. That voice. Oh, man. I would like two pieces of bread and about a half an hour of William Marshall's voice, and that's a sandwich I could eat for days. That's a weird metaphor.
That is an odd one, but it works.
It was a nice surprise. I expected something stereotypical and cringy, and I got something that actually had some depth to it. Yeah. So it's going to be a provisional recommendation. If you like vampire films. I'd say
that, I would go with that.
If you've never seen this, you got an hour and a half. Why not? It is mm-hmm. of its time. So if you're a younger listener, which I don't know that we have any, you might find this way too slow for you. But otherwise, why not?
Yeah, check it out.
What else I say why not to is our poll question. And this week, we would like to know, who do you think was the worst cinematic vampire? And how can you tell us what you think? You can send us an email at us@maxmikemovies.com, just like Bill O'Lading, Max.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
Thank you. us@maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, leave a comment there, as Vince often does. You can let us know about a series you would like us to do or a movie that you think should be in a series, like Vince just did, and we will take a look at that. You never know. You could also just find us on social media. You can find us on Blueski, Mastodon, and Facebook, all three places. We are Max Mike Movies. Give us a call. Don't be the only person to ask Max for a date. You can call our hotline.
I don't need anyone but Doris.
617-398-7266. That number again is 617-398-7266. And if you like podcasts, and who doesn't, we're on a podcast app somewhere near you.
In your neighborhood.
Perhaps too near you. But what else is near us is the movie we're going to watch next week, Max. We're just starting, basically, this I Want to Watch Your Film. What film are we going to watch next week?
Well, this is also another kind of a period piece, but we're mainly watching it because one of the characters is played by a close personal friend of mine. We're going to check out Lost Boys, starring everyone's favorite actor, Bernard Hughes, my close personal friend.
Now, to be fair, you actually have met Bernard Hughes, haven't you?
I have actually met him. we were like that.
As opposed to your other close personal friends whom...
I have met by a proxy.
In your brain, that tiny little thing that rolls around in your head, looking for that
little hole. It's on my dream board. I'm manifesting.
Uh-huh. Is that what that smell is? Okay.
Yes.
So, The Lost Boys.
Yes, it is.
Boys.
I've got a cream for it. Yes, Lost Boys, Sail Into the Night, which also has the dubious honor of starring not one, but two 80s Corys.
Have we had any since?
No, we've managed to stamp out that particular plague in this country.
It's also got a Kiefer in it, doesn't it? And
it has a Sutherland.
Where does that name come from? Kiefer. I mean, it sounds
My wife, I think I'll Kiefer.
No, it sounds like a euphemism for something that I think Donald probably smoked a lot of when he was younger.
Keef is part of that, but
see? Yes.
Could be.
But be found. Don't be lost. Tune in next week for The Lost Boys.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Scenes. Snipes is charismatic throughout.
Juxtaposed.
As funny as that is, I'm cutting it out.